Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Black Belt Selling with Stephanie and Anna Scheller. How do I call you now, Stephanie?
We'll go with Scheller for now. I'm doing this funky thing where the public image is Scheller, and among friends and family, I'll be Dupre. So.
So does Ben get to call you Dupre or Scheller? What is it?
Ben can call me whatever he wants to call me. I will answer, I promise.
Which leads me to the excitement of welcoming you to our show with none other than sales legend Ben Gay III. Ben, welcome to Black Belt Selling again. We're so glad to have you back.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be with you ladies again. And as I talk to people around the country, I hear nothing but great things about all of your shows.
Wonderful.
Wow, people who are talking about us to people. That's exciting. Sounds like he's as excited to be back here as we are to have him, because it was a lot of fun to have you on the show last time, Ben. I cannot tell you how much we enjoyed that.
Well, I'll do my best to be fun and exciting again today.
Well, we've already got off to a good start. So I have a question for you. I get asked this a lot, and I always try to answer this question as best I can, but I feel like you might have, maybe a couple extra years of experience on me. And so you might have had some more experiences. You might have a few more ideas on this one, but I get asked a lot, what's the biggest misperception that you find among salespeople that keeps them from closing sales?
It's two extremes. There's one group who won't learn their skill. They just figure if they show up, everything will work out. And that crowd rarely makes it. Sometimes youth and enthusiasm will carry them for a while, but eventually the lack of skills raises its ugly head. The other extreme are those people who believe if they memorize five tricky closes and put ethics aside, they can make it that way. And they never make it. They make it, sometimes they'll make it for a brief period of time. I call them the shooting stars of selling. But they flame out rather quickly and drop to the ground. So it's the lazy and dishonest among us, and the lazy and incompetent among us.
So lazy is the common factor there. I mean, just let's lay it out the way it is. How about those people that think that you have to, that you're either a natural born salesman or you're not? You know, it either comes easy or it doesn't. What do you say about that? Because I think that's a large myth, is a big myth that keeps a lot of people from moving forward with sales.
The answer to your question is both. I've met a lot of naturally good people. They can get better by improving their skills, and I've met people who had to learn everything that they know. I'll give you an example. September 15th, 1965, I've told you about this before, Wednesday, September 15th, 1965, at noon, I joined an MLM company that ultimately made me rich and sent me all over the world and so on when I became president of the company. But that day that I took the job interview, it was an opportunity meeting, but it had been billed as an interview. There were just two of us in the room. There was one natural salesman there interviewing for the job. His name was Zig Ziglar. And there was one unnatural person interviewing for the job. He was named Ben Gay. I was raised in my family. I have manners and so on. But I didn't know anything about selling. Even though I was raised in a family of salespeople, they didn't go to sales training. I don't know if they even had it back then. My father just opened a business and ran it successfully for many years as its number one salesperson. So Zig was a natural. Even he got better when he learned skills, and we got him on script so that he would present the material he was supposed to present instead of telling funny stories. Zig used to drift a bit while he was getting meetings. It was enjoyable, but wasn't as effective as having the people have the information they needed to make a decision. So Zig was a natural, training helped. I was an unnatural, if that's a word, and training saved me. I was so bad, my first 6 months in the business, not a penny changed hands. I didn't recruit anybody. I didn't. It was a cosmetic business. I didn't even sell a tube of lipstick to my mother or sister, I guess, because not a penny changed hands. And then Bill Dempsey, the guy who sponsored Zig and me, took me aside one night as I entered an opportunity meeting, again, with nobody with me. And he says, Ben, I want to talk to you. And I went over to him. I said, what do you need? He says, I don't want you to come to the meetings anymore. And I said, why? I had $5,000 sunk in this, which back, you know, adjusted for inflation, that's like $50,000. And I was making $100 a week. I couldn't exactly write off a $5,000 investment. He said, you won't learn the scripts. You won't discipline yourself. You never bring anybody to the meetings because you don't say to them what we've asked you to say to them. When you're here, you don't do any good. We can't put you up front because you've never bothered to learn the opportunity meeting script. And then when we run the movie and turn the lights up and say, turn to the person who brought you, A, you don't have anybody to turn to, and B, if somebody who's seen you around a lot thinks maybe you could help and asks you to come over and help close them, you blow the deal because you've never learned the closes. So until you do, I don't want to see you at meetings anymore. And I put up a little fight, but he was the boss, and so I left. And about 2 weeks later, I went into his office with an appointment. I gave the invitation to an opportunity meeting verbatim. I gave the 42-minute opportunity meeting script verbatim because he had told me don't miss a word. And then I sat down and drew the circles on the paper and gave him the six closes. You know, if you bought after the first close, you didn't hear the other five, but we had six backed up if the first one didn't work on you. The next week or so, I walked in with three or four people, closed them all, and I was off and running. In the first 6 months, I didn't make a penny, not a penny change hands. In the second 6 months, I made $101,000 part-time, adjusted to inflation. That's over $1 million today, part-time.
Wow.
And the difference was training. In the meantime, Zig had done pretty good right out of the gate, but he got better with training and scripting and so on. But he was what you would call a natural salesman. I'm confident he came out of his mother smiling and telling a story.
He probably did.
You know, it's really funny that, to me, listening to you talk, Ben, my mind always starts to kind of elaborate on what you're saying, and it drives me crazy how people seem to think, you know, they understand you're not going to make it to the Olympics without training. Even if you're a natural, you know, swimmer, you're not going to make it to the Olympics without training. So why do people seem to think they can make it to the top tiers in sales without training? And it's just, the more I think about it, the more it just blows my mind. So
laziness and ignorance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's there's a lot of people going out there that are promoting that it's okay, that's just normal now.
Well, it's not okay.
It won't. You know, if you ever want to you want to perform at a higher level than anyone else around you, you have to do something different than anyone else around you. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So you are a huge advocate of studying sales psychology. Can you talk a little bit to our listeners about sales psychology? What is it? How does it help? How do you study it? Just start sharing.
I may not be able to go very deep with you. I'm barely a high school graduate. My father said that they must have graduated me based on height. You hit 5'10" and they let you go. He didn't see any other signs of cranial activity. But the basic answer in layman's terms, which is all I can speak in, is that there are certain things. You know, when someone dies, they talk about the five steps of grieving, and I never can remember what they are, but denial and anger and blah, 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 and acceptance and so on. And you have to go through them. Some people go through them in a day. Some people go through them over a period of many years before they get to the end of the loss of a loved one. Selling is the same thing. There are psychological steps that you have to go through with a prospect, unless you're order taking. You know, if you're standing in a grocery store selling bags of wheat, then they either have the money or they don't, and that's pretty much it. But if you're selling something that they could do without or get somewhere else or what have you, there are certain steps you have to go through, not unlike the five steps of grieving. And if you don't go through them, you probably won't make a sale, and you certainly won't make a lifetime connection. I sold something this morning to a person that I first sold something to, he told me, 49 years ago. And he has bought whatever I was selling at various times, usually sales training for his people or what have you. But he's bought whatever I was selling over that period of time since we were young distributors in Holiday Magic in Atlanta, in, according to what he said, 1966. And he's still buying because I value the friendship and the relationship far more than any single sale. So that's a big part of it. But you have to earn their trust. Even if it's surface trust, people say, well, trust is built over years. Maybe deep trust where you turn over your life to somebody is built over years, but I'm capable, and most master closers and sales infiltrators are capable of building an initial level of trust sufficient enough to make sales in a few minutes. I maintain, I may have told you this before, most sales are made or lost in the first 10 to 15 seconds. Sometimes before you've met the person, if they're peeking through their blinds as you get out of your car, let's say you're doing something in their house, things about you can kill the sale, and you don't even know the sale has started yet, because they take their little computer-like brain and they run through everybody they've ever met that looks like you, dresses like you, talks like you, walks like you, etc. And sometimes that can be a serious problem based on their past experiences. And or you can overcome them by, you know, 85% of all the problems in selling are solved by selling a quality product or service that's competitively priced, and spend the majority of your day talking to people qualified to purchase the product or service. Meanwhile, you become a person of class, quality, and substance with the ability to tastefully project that out. You don't come in saying, I am Donald Trump, I am the greatest, I'm the person of class, quality, and substance, elect me and I'll make everything in the world better. That doesn't work in selling.
Right.
It's much more subtle than that. So we must earn their trust, get them to like us. People buy from friends, even if a friend has only been a friend for 5 or 10 minutes or an hour or whatever. And we have to work with them where they are. In the Bible it says somewhere, meet them where they are. The same thing is true in selling. So you try and blend into their family if you're selling in-home sales, or blend into their business team if you're selling them in a business. Get them to relax, like, and trust you. And then, with a quality product that's competitively priced, et cetera, selling is so easy. I mean, there are little steps you need to take. They have drifted into my general conversation. Last night I took Gigi out to dinner, and there were two places I would have been happy to go. I'd have been happy anywhere with her, but there were two places I really had in mind. So I said, Gigi, here are your choices tonight. And I gave her two to pick from. And she says, oh, that's sweet. I pick It's Personal. It's the name of a new little place in our town. She said, It's Personal. And then as we pulled up a few minutes later, she said, you didn't just choice close me, did you? And I said, yeah. That's the way I think. I don't know any other way to think.
Well, but you know, but closing sales is not just about money changing hands. It's about influence. I actually went to a seminar this week on conflict management, and one of the ways that you deal with people, especially when you need a decision made, is you give choices. And it's not about closing a sale. It's about getting a decision made, you know. So sales is a broader conversation than just getting somebody to buy a product from you. Wouldn't you agree, Ben?
I do agree. But even giving them choices is called a close. In fact, specifically in the book I wrote for J. Douglas Edwards, Sales, Closing Power, it's called the alternate choice close. So it's just, as I said, it's just an automatic way for me to think and talk and act now, because over the years I finally picked up what works, and it's subconscious. But the end result is you have to become the real answer to your question. If I had time to read it, I would read the last chapter in the closer's part two. It's called Sales Infiltration. The real key is infiltrating their family, company, and their personal mind, and becoming part of their team. So it's not salesperson versus customer person. It is a new team made up of a person who was a salesperson moments ago, but now he's a team member and a customer, and she now is no longer just a customer. She's a team member. And then the team together solves a problem, enabling you to get into the position of what I call the magic close. Thank you very much. I created it, and I hear people behind McDonald's counter using it on me now, so apparently it's working somewhere. I spend my time in a sales presentation, either on whatever's needed, friendship, trust, the product, the service, answering their questions, but I'm listening and listening and listening, and I'm infiltrating them with eye contact, body language, et cetera, and a proper presentation of the concept, whatever it is, so that I can get myself in a position near the end to say, based on what you've told me, based on what we've discussed, here's what I recommend we do. We, as in team. Here's what I recommend we do. Then you tell them what you recommend they do, and then you say, fair enough. Now, if you're in lawyer school, in law school, they teach you, you never ask a question to which you don't already know the answer. So I spend my time getting, I know what I'm going to say at the end to close them. Based on what you've told me, based on what we've discussed, here's what I suggest we do, fill in the blank, fair enough. But I spend my time getting into a position where I can say that and righteously expect a positive answer. At the worst, some more questions. The way it's phrased, it's very difficult to say no to that. They may explain a little bit more and cover something you missed or didn't hear or they hadn't brought up. But basically, with a quality product and you've done all the things you're supposed to do and you've given a good presentation and you've infiltrated their thinking, that's where you go.
You know, I have to say that's something that I don't think people think. The whole time you were talking, I kept thinking about how it does become just part of who you are. And it's not about manipulating these people into saying yes or no. It's about helping them out, but helping them find a solution without having to rack their brains, making it easy on them, which is what you just said. And I think that's what a lot of people tend to miss when it comes to this portion of the sales process. They assume if I'm selling, I'm taking advantage of people, and that's really not the purpose. That's not the point, and that's not the way.
You may or may not be taking advantage of them. That's your ethical situation in life. J. Douglas Edwards used to say, I used to argue with him about it. In fact, I wrote about it in Sales Goals and Power, the book I did for him after he died. Doug used to say that there's no significant difference between a salesman and a con man. The techniques are the same. The difference is the belief in product. Now, I think primarily I argued with him because I didn't like the sound of that, but there's a lot of truth in it. A con man, con stands for confidence. A confidence man wins over the confidence of the person he or she is talking to. And that's what a good salesperson, master closer, sales infiltrator does. So then it's not unlike a gun. You can buy a gun and go stick up a bank, or you can buy a gun, never use it, but it's there to protect your family when and if the need should arise. The gun isn't the problem. It's the owner of the gun and what they plan to do with the gun. Same with sales strength, sales techniques. If I'm selling a quality product that's competitively priced, I'm talking to somebody who's qualified to buy it, mentally, financially, whatever, then it's to their advantage to them, for me to move them into a position where they'll make a positive decision. Years ago, I was doing a sales training session in a company I owned, and my top salesperson was in the room. Scott Wentworth was his name, and there were numerous people in there who wanted to be Scott Wentworth. And he had just earlier that day, I awarded him with, a new Cadillac or a Corvette or something. He got one or the other, trips around the world and everything. And some lady in the room raised her hand and said, Mr. Gay, I think you manipulate Scott Wentworth. And before I could say anything, Scott jumped up and he said, he sure does. He manipulated me from making $100 a week and losing it all on horse racing to my bookie, for making whatever he was making at the time, $400,000 or $500,000 a year, and this is 20 some odd years ago. He's given me a new Cadillac. He's given me a new Corvette. He sent me to Hawaii. He had a helicopter come in here against the rules and pick me up in the parking lot and took me to the Sonoma Mission because I told him that I always wanted to be picked up in a helicopter like an important person. He did that for me. So he turned back to me and he said, "Mr. Gay, if you're manipulating me, please manipulate me more."
Wow.
That's awesome. And I think I'm going to put that one up pretty much everywhere because I think everyone needs to hear that, that, you know, the difference between a salesman and a con man is their belief in their product. That is amazing. And you're right. And I love the fact that someone could recognize that, you know, whatever you want to call it, manipulation, help, but recognize that some people may view it that way and that there's nothing wrong with it in that scenario. Now, I did want to ask, just for our listeners who may have missed it the first time around, can you repeat the magic close for us again?
Sure. After a solid presentation where you've won over their trust and friendship, you're just trying to manipulate yourself into a position where you can say, knowing what the answer will probably be, I preface that by saying in law school they teach you never to answer a question in open court to which you don't already know the answer. But by the way, if you and I are the talk and I'm trying to sell you something, if you ever hear me say the magic close to you, you will know that I've already entered your order. You know, while we were talking, I entered the order. I know what you're going to buy even maybe before you do because I've been listening. I've been feeling what we're talking about. I understand where we're going. And then when I'm in the right position, I say, Anna, based on what we've discussed and what you've told me, here's what I suggest we do. Fill in the blank, whatever the positive action is you want to take. Fair enough. And that's it. I close. You know, sometimes I'm talking to somebody and say, all right, write me up. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. So they don't get to hear the magic close. That's too bad for them because they could learn from it. But if I would say 100% of the time that you haven't interrupted me to buy before I thought you were ready to buy, which is fine. But 100% of the time, if I go to the end, that's the close I use, always. First time I talk to somebody, and if I talk to them 10 times, even if they can recite it with me, it's become a trademark. It's highly effective. My human behavioral scientist friends tell me that it's ingenious because you put it on them. You know, based on what you've told me, here's what I suggest we, the new team we formed, do. Fair enough. Which doesn't leave a lot of room for no. It's usually yes the vast majority of the time. At worst, it smokes out a remaining question or objection. That's fine, too. And when we answer that, then I say, okay, as I said, here's what I suggest we do, blah, 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 blah. Fair enough?
Uh-huh. You know, that's genius. And you were saying earlier that you don't know much about sales psychology, but really it's also about language. But there's a piece that you're bringing up, Ben, that I'd love to get your comments on, because I know you have a fascinating story about a famous criminal that perfectly illustrates this principle, and that is the power of presence, and listening. And I would just love for you to comment on that, because I really believe that the biggest temptation for any salesperson is to talk too much, too soon, too fast, and not listen.
Absolutely. It's an old cliche. I don't say it in seminars because probably the five speakers in front of me have all said it, but God gave us one mouth and two ears, and probably that was a signal as to the proportionality of our conversations. When I'm talking to a person, even in a social situation, I picture myself as a tuning fork. I'm sensitive to what's coming out of their mouth, what their body language is telling me, and I'm reading them. I'm listening to what they're saying. I'm hearing the words, but I'm reading them so we know where we are. If I knew as much as I know about selling today, if I knew as much back when I was a young man chasing girls around, I would have done a lot better. Because back then it was, hi, I'm Ben Gay. You know, taking swigs off a beer and wondering why they didn't want to spend time with me. The listening to the other person, being aware, being totally there. Every book, I'm a big reader, and every book I read about a great person, man or female, 200 years ago, 2,000 years ago, or yesterday, somewhere in the book you'll find something that says something to this effect. When I was with him or her, I felt as if I was the most important person in the world. Or sometimes they'll say, I will feel as if I was the only person in the world. In every book, if it's a great leader, whether you agreed with him or not, I mean, Hitler was a great leader, whether you liked where he was leading people is a different issue. Charlie Manson, personal acquaintance of mine, was a great leader. He was just evil. But they all use the same techniques. When I was visiting with Charlie Manson in his cell at San Quentin years ago, I walked in. He'd asked to meet me. When I walked in, he had two bunks in his cell, but because he was in the adjustment center and he was Charlie Manson, there wasn't a great line to be his roommate. So he had a cell to himself. On the top shelf, he slept on the bottom. On the top shelf, there were a few personal items, clothing, a laundry bag, and so on. And one book, which he said was his Bible and the only book he ever needed to read. And that's, so I picked it up, looked at it. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So great leaders, evil, including the evil ones and including the pure ones, great leaders have an innate ability to make you feel as if you're the most important person in the world. Charlie Manson, he's nuts. He's not nuts like you see on television, that's the show he puts on for the cameras. He's quietly and evilly nuts. But when you're sitting across from him, I was either sitting on the bunk beside him or in a little chair facing him, I've visited him three times. When he was looking in your eyes, you felt like he was looking in your eyes and out through the back of your head. He never broke eye contact. He acted like he cared what you were talking about. And so I remember thinking to myself, I am so glad I didn't run into Charlie when I was 19 years old and wandering, and lost, because he might have gotten me. He got people who were smarter than I was and came from wealthier homes and so on, and he got them anyway. Hitler, I've read a lot of stuff about Hitler over the years. Everybody who knew him or talked to somebody, you know, who wrote the book who knew him, said he would just zero in on you as you're the only person in the world. Bill Clinton, a friend of mine, is a commercial pilot and flies the private jet. It's a big jet liner. It's not a corporate jet, for a very wealthy man. Steve Bing is his name. And he flies Bill Clinton around. They're good friends. My pilot friend says they hate it when Clinton's on board. And I said, I thought he was a friendly guy. I said, oh, friendly isn't the issue. The issue is we can't leave the plane and go to the hotel until the honored guest, and we're talking about Clinton now, is off the plane. He said getting Bill Clinton off the plane while he works his way through six or seven crew members, goes down the steps and starts meeting boys who are fuel, line boys who are fueling the plane and so on. He said that can take, we landed once, turned off the engines. It was 2 hours before we could leave. Relating one-on-one with the people he met. He said it was phenomenal. I read a book somewhere, a guy met with Clinton in the Oval Office, and he said when they were served iced tea, and he said, finally he's going to break eye contact with me because he has to drink. Well, when he went to drink, he said, I look up, I'm looking through the bottom of Clinton's glass at two eyes staring right back at me through the bottom of the glass. He said he never broke eye contact. I'm sitting in the Oval Office with the most powerful man on the planet, and I felt as if I were the most important person on earth.
Well, I hate to break in on this one because, Ben, you are the most engaging person on this call right now, honestly, and we really want to give you an opportunity to make an offer to our listeners, both the live listeners and listeners. We're about to go off the air in about 30 seconds. We're going to keep recording here so we can get the whole offer out. So if you miss the offer, go ahead, go back, listen to the recording, grab the recording at the link so you can catch the offer, because I know, Ben, you have an offer for our listeners, right, just like last time?
I do. Anything they order, all they have to mention is black belt selling. Down in the bottom of the, there's a comment area. Just write in black belt selling. And this is after you go to my website, which is B as in Ben, F as in Frank, G as in Gay, the number 3.com, BFG3.com. Go to products, and the little drop-down box comes down. Fill in your name and email, and we'll send you some free newsletters and other information from time to time. We won't bug you. I don't like writing them, so they're infrequent, but they're good when they come. And then go to products, and I would, at a bare minimum, get the closers parts 1 and 2 books. And if you do, I'll send them to you priority mail for free. Also, the priority mail, so you'll have them in 2 or 3 days free. And then look around, and you'll see a thing we call executive packages. And right now, they're about 70% off their if purchased separately price, because I just did a series of seminars in Florida and a few other places. And so I offered it to them in the seminar. I offer it to your people now. It's about $2,000 worth of books, CDs. It's everything I know about selling, literally. I've written it all down and recorded it and so on. So it's everything I know about selling is in that package. And if you bought it separately, bought everything in it, it would cost you about $2,000. You'll see all the details there. And you can get it for $5.95, that's 70%, some 70-some-odd percent off. I'm criticized for having it that much off because people say they don't believe 70% offers. But I found most people are sort of happy with them if they understand it's a good value. So you get 70% off, and I'll still send it free priority mail shipping. So that's www.bfg3.com. And I would mention black belt selling down in the comment box.
Wow.
Well,
thank
Ben,
you.
Absolutely. It has been it's always a delight to have you on the show with us. We always learn such amazing things from you. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much. Anna, I appreciate it. Stephanie, I appreciate it. And Stephanie, congratulations and best wishes on your new marital setup. I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We love having you here. I'm so glad you're able to join us again. We'll definitely get you back on the show again sometime. Awesome. I love that offer. So we'll get him back again, guys. But for the time being, go to BFG3. Get your order. This stuff is worth it. The information is invaluable. Like I said at the training yesterday, doesn't matter whether or not you like a particular trainer. There's plenty of trainer options out there. Get yourself trained in sales. Ben is one of the best ones out there, if not the best right now. Check out his material. It's phenomenal. BFG3.com. Get your order in. And for today, I'm Stephanie, here for Anna, joined by our honorary black belt, Ben Gavis-Bern. We're wrapping up black belt selling. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys next week.